Okay. What I'd like to do is go over the test real quick. Number one, and you will take care to do. It's a little clumsy, and I'm dropping into the middle or a sentence that's already begun. So something like, you will guard, watch, to do. Number one is the infinitive construct root asa. By the way, I felt bad. I didn't know what to do, and I guess I should have reminded you that parsing includes roots. And some people just forgot to write the root down, and it was evident that you probably knew it. But in terms of grading, more or less, by the way, the translations were worth more or less a point a word, just as a ballpark. That's how I get to that little 18 in the margin. The parsings are worth 2 points for the verbs, and it was usually one, like number three was only worth 1 point, which was just kind of a single issue that wasn't a parsing out a verb with all the pieces of a verb thing. So you could make up, you could make three or four or five mistakes on parsing and still only lose two, because there's a maximum of two off. So essentially the little code next to the letter one, 18 is for the translation, 7 are the three verbs and one non-verb parsing. Get it? That adds up to the point. So there is some quantitative sense to this. So you will observe to do. Now this is clumsy, and most of you made some sense out of it. That which will go good to you, literally. That it's really that by which. Oftentimes this a share in this syntax is simply translated as a purpose clause. So that it will be good for you, or it will go well with you. And so that, however you handle the first share, should be the same thing you do to the second share. Or trying to take it as a noun clause, that by which you will be multiplied, be numerous. That's what rava means, third hey rava. A lot of you put PL here and you got tricked up by the fact that the dagesh in the baith, I'm talking about parsing number two here, is dagesh lane. Yeah, again, real basic problem. When you see a dot, the first question you have to ask is it lane or forte? If it's lane, kind of ignore it. It's got nothing to do with spelling. If it's forte, you got to pay attention to it. And that could signal a PAL if it's a dagesh forte in the middle root letter, which it seems to be here, except that it's dagesh lane, following a silent schwa. Most of you were pleased to comment on the energic nun, which brought a smile to my heart. Rava means to be many. Some of you wrote to be great, and I did not count that wrong, but just for the record, rava means to be large in number. Gadal, from which you get gadol, means to be large in size, magnitude, big. So you will be very, ma'od, very numerous, as Yahweh, the God of your fathers, that's all the subject. Yahweh, the God of your fathers, spoke, lock, to you. Now, here's a good I mean, granted, this was only worth one, so I don't feel so bad. Lach is in fact masculine, but it looks feminine. And the reason for that is, and here I may apologize, I know we talked about that in our section, Dale, I don't know if plead ignorance, you don't remember a thing, whether you talked about that, but it's a pause form, because there's an accent there. And so the correct answer to number three was prepositional phrase, second singular masculine, in pause. If you wanted to say any more, you'd say, which makes it look like it's second singular feminine, but it's not. That was the unusual question that needed comment. So if you didn't know that, that's... life is not fair anyway. By the way, I want to, because I wrote this on a lot of papers, when you translate Yahweh, okay, and here this isn't just being a stickler. You can translate Yahweh any number of ways. The most common English convention, as you all know, is Lord, but it's L-O-R-D in all caps. You have to write it in all caps because that's the convention. Now, that's an artificial translation. The word in Hebrew isn't Lord. The word in Hebrew is Yahweh, okay? And I assume you know the history of that, and this is one thing I think you can teach a Bible class, that when they see the word L-O-R-D in all caps, it doesn't mean Lord. Even though we're so used to that. Even in the commandments, you will not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. I am the Lord your God. No one can say Jesus is Lord except by the Holy Spirit. Ooh, I wonder if that's Yahweh there. Wow, does that change the understanding of that passage? So this is not an insignificant point. Now, again, if you don't want to use Yahweh, that's fine. In Jewish tradition, as you know, they don't say the divine name. Most academics do say Yahweh, okay, and then translate it as Yahweh, or you can just use the four letters YHWH as the tetragrammaton. That's what you have in Hebrew, unpointed, so don't point it. You can just put the four consonants if you want. But don't, and long speech, don't write Lord, capital L, small O-R-D. All right, and again, some of you did that, which is what's prompted this speech. I didn't mark it wrong, don't worry. I didn't take a point off for that. But on some papers I wrote a note just to alert, and that's why I'm making this speech for the sake of everybody. If you've got the actual word Lord, then you're translating the Hebrew word Adonai. And that's certainly there in many texts, but it's not there if the Hebrew word is Yahweh. So I just kind of remind us of the convention. Okay, back to the text. As Yahweh, the God of your fathers, spoke to bear to you a land, zavat, flowing, gushing milk and honey. Zavat is actually the cow participle. It's the feminine participle of zuv. Hollow root, zuv, participle zav, feminine participle zava. But this is in pause. Sorry, it's not in pause. It's in construct. So zava, comets hay, goes to zavat with a pathak tau. All right, way too much on, any questions on number one? Two, for God knows that in the day of your eating, infinitive construct, in the day of your eating from it, your eyes will be opened. Nifkacha is the nifal perfect while consecutive. Akal kem is infinitive construct. Your eating. It's a construct chain. In the day of your eating from it. A lot of you wrote, comma, then your eyes will be open. And that's fine. You can translate the wow as then. In fact, that's very good in a sense. It's also unnecessary. You can simply translate the wow as a comma. Your eyes will be opened. It's definite if it's in a construct chain. What's the rule? A noun in the construct state will never have the article. So you can tell whether it's definite only by the last noun in the construct chain. So a construct noun will become definite if it's in a construct chain where the final noun is definite. Next step, how do you know that the final noun is definite here? It's got a pronominal suffix. Right, there are three ways a noun can be definite. Number one is? Got the article. Number two, proper noun. Number three, pronominal suffix. Not just anybody's eating, or not just anybody's father, but my father. Yeah?
With the parsing of Akal Kem, did you want to comment on the suffix?
Sure. Okay. I'm really looking in parsing, though it's good to parse them all out, but what I'm really looking for is conjugation, aspect, root. Those are the main pieces. Kal perfect, katal. Generally speaking, if you got it translated right, you're going to have the person, number, gender, and all that jazz correct. Three. He means she. Now, of course, the point of number 7 is not to tell me that it's the pronoun she. The point of number 7 is to say it's supposed to be she, it's pointed as she, but the Hebrew word is actually he. Right? The Hebrew, the consonants here are who, not he. And this is a classic case in the Pentateuch of Kethev Kareh, where what's written, Kethev, is the consonants, but what's read out, Kareh, is a different vowel pointing on the same consonants. And it's kind of interesting why that is. By the way, my theory on this is that wows and yods were probably much more fluid and interchangeable at one point than they are now. That certainly helps us explain that the divine name Yahweh, as we're going to see in Exodus 3, right? Theoretically, but this is kind of a 99% confirmed hypothesis, is related to the verb Hayah, right? But then how does Hayah turn out to be, Hawah turn out to be Yah? How does Hayah with a Yod, Hayah, turn out to be Yahweh with a Wow? If the root is Hey Yod Hey, how does it turn out to be Hey Wow Hey? Answer? Well, maybe Yods and Wows were kind of interchangeable. At least that's a theory on explaining that. All right, number, are we done with this? No. She gave to me from the tree va'okel and I ate. I think most of you got this right. Okel is, in fact, imperfect, first singular common, with the aleph doing double duty. Should I be writing this? Oh, I don't have my stuff with me. Okay. Number 4. Got to plug it in. That's my fundamental problem. But I don't have a pen. Does anyone have a marker in your pocket? Is it a real fat one? No, it won't work. I need a thin one. Sorry. Number 4. Aurora! I don't know if I should be pleased or nervous that a lot of you translated this damned. But I think I made that comment sort of offhandedly, and that's what you got to be careful what you say. I told you that speech about pastoral leadership, didn't I? The scariest thing about pastoral leadership, about being a leader, is somebody may actually follow you. Hey, look at this. That's exactly what I'm looking for. Extra points. You speak for yourself. Unfortunately, I don't have a blank overhead. Now, does anyone have a transparency? we're right on the margin. Now, can you see this? Oh, look at that. What was I talking about? No, I was talking. Oh, I know. I wanted to write O-Kale is actually this, right? O-Kale, as though it were Yo, right? If it were just three consonants and the Yod prefix, that Aleph is really first singular common, where the Yod would be third singular masculine. So this is the root, A-Kale, except that this Aleph drops out. That's why that form looks so dumb. But that's actually what first Alephs do. All right, now number 4, Arurata. Arur is the Kal passive participle. Arar, cursed. Usually translated cursed are you. But this is really the word for cursed. So damned isn't wrong. Number 5, Ki Yiviyaka. Hifil imperfect. I wish I had a point back for all of you that made this past tense. Yahweh your God will cause you to come. Will bring you. The key here is actually temporal, though again we're picking this up in the middle of a sentence, and if you wrote because or for, I let that go, that's fine. I think in context this is probably temporal. When Yahweh your God will bring you to the land, a share which nishba he shavad in the Nephal. Shavad in the Nephal simply means to swear or promise by oath. Which he swore. Remember, the Nephal makes this third singular masculine. He swore to your avoths, to your avs. Any questions on 5? 6. And not you will naga in it. Literally, you will not touch in it. The preposition is clumsy, but the Hebrew idiom, the root, number 11, is first nun, naga. And not you will touch it lest you die, from muth. Most of you got that one. 7. Parsing number 12. Dibarta. Note the accent. I even wrote it in there for you to tell you it's consecutive. Perfect while consecutive with the accent kicked over. Not dibarta, but dibarta. And you will speak them. Bam technically is the direct object with baith, which is unusual, but it happens. Some of you tried you will speak about them or to try to do something with the baith, which is okay, but unnecessary. And you will speak them in your yashav-ing. The root of shevet is yashav, first nun. Yashav becomes shevet in the infinitive construct. So that's what this is. Yashav, to dwell, reside. In your dwelling, in your house. Kal, infinitive construct. Any questions on 7? Number 8. And the man hid himself and his wife. A lot of you wrote just that, and the man hid himself and his wife. I didn't take anything off for this, but do you realize that in English, you've sort of made and his wife into the direct object of the sentence? As though the sentence read, the man hid himself and also he hid his wife. So how you do it? It's just clumsy. Really, it's the man and his wife hid themselves. But ishto is subject there. We talked about that in class more than once, and that's just a Hebrew idiom, oftentimes using the singular subject with the verb. Any questions on 8? 9, and you will shuf him heal. Whatever shuf means. Bruise, crush, hurt. And it's clumsy. You will bruise or crush him heel. That's literally what it says. But this is Genesis 3:15. You will shuf his heel. You can translate the direct object, him, as the pronominal suffix almost, his heel. Or you can say, and you will crush him with reference to heel. Something like that, if you want to make sort of an adverb, what's called an adverbial accusative out of the akave. By the way, the word for heel is H-E-E-L. I think that's the body part. Some of us did not grow up in an age of spell checkers, you have to remember. And we had mothers who were very fussy about spelling correction. If you put a church bulletin out that's full of spelling errors, shame on you. No, I mean this is just part of being competent. And having a little bit of a professional attitude that to the glory of God means we try to get it right. I'm not saying you're going to go to hell or have to confess your sins if there's a spelling mistake here and there, for Pete's sake. But I know on a test that's the last thing sometimes on your mind. So fair enough, but principle invoked. Number 10. Not you will walk after gods, other ones from the gods of the... I just love this one because I got to take a point off. And this was one place where my sadistic side took over. Usually I just err to the side of grace. But on this one, it was the opus alienum. From the gods of the peoples, plural. All right? Because the plural of Am is peoples. We tend to think of people as a plural noun, as though people is the plural of person. And that's okay in English, but in Hebrew, Am means a collective group of people, and more than one collective groups of people are peoples, if you can get over the clumsiness of how that sounds. But that's not insignificant in terms of the parallel to the nations, and that we're talking about actually realizing that there are more than one sort of ethnic cultural groups under God's plan in the Bible. If that's a chance to remind ourselves that it's about the nations or the peoples, then so be it. Which are all around you, Savivoth Thekem. So you will not walk halak, right, kalim perfect halak, after other gods from the gods of the peoples who are around you. Any questions? Please. The parsing for 15 was kal imperfect shuf, hollow root. Kal imperfect shuf, second singular masculine, with third singular masculine object suffix. The anu at the end is the object suffix. Got it? Okay.
Is it always wrong to translate ha adam as Adam?
Well, if you're going to try ha adam as Adam, I think you got to translate it as the Adam. Don't you? Yeah. Somebody wrote Adam here. Was that you?
Yeah, that was me.
Did you just have Adam and his wife? Did I give you a point? Did I mark it wrong?
Yeah.
Well, good for me. what did I say? If it's going to say Adam, you should say the Adam. Did you have the Adam?
No.
Oh, that's where I marked it wrong.
Okay.
If you had said the Adam, I probably would have given it to you. See, you're assuming that the article here is like a capital A in Adam, I think. Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of fun. You can go through Genesis 2 and 3 and try to decide on the basis of the Hebrew when it's man and when it's Adam and when it's the Adam. And, of course, that's part of the fun, is that those things all overlap, right? His name actually means man, capital M-A-N. Because his name actually means dirt. That's the joke, right? He came from the Adama. All right, anything on this? We got a half an hour left, or barely that, to do Exodus 3. Any questions on verses 1 and 2? Now that I have a black marker here, thanks to Mark. Any questions on 1 and 2? Dale, anything come up here? I know we talked about this kal passive participle. And if you don't like it, this is one where you just take my word for it and remember it. But someday you'll have this great aha experience during the offertory or something and go, that's a kal passive participle. V'yomer Moshe, I'm picking it up at 3. Is that all right? Exodus 3. V'yomer Moshe, Asurana! Oh, man, did you parse this? Asura. Kal, cohortative, right? With the comet's hay at the end. Again, it's defective spelling. Really learned to hate defective spelling, right? If you would write this out, it'd be Asura. Am I on the screen even? Yeah. Asura with the mater letter, root sur, means to turn aside. So let me turn aside. This is kind of a deliberative cohortative, right? This isn't asking for permission. He sort of say, oh, let me turn, you know how we talk this way, right? You really aren't asking anybody's permission when you say, oh, let's go. Now put that in a more deliberative way. Let me take a look at this. See? Let me turn aside. Nah. That's kind of part of the consideration. It doesn't really mean please. It's just one of those words that, you know, probably body English are as much of the translation of nah as anything else. Let me turn aside. And air A. Now parse air A. Is it while consecutive or not? No. How do you know that? Because the wow is pointed with a schwa, right? It's not the pointing of the while consecutive. So this is an unconverted, still a heathen. It's an unconverted imperfect. And the idiom here of a imperative or its derivatives, like a cohortative or a jussive, followed by an unconverted future, is often a way of expressing purpose. Now, you can leave this as simply a future indicative. Let me turn aside and I will see. But it's probably almost a textbook example of that purpose clause. Let me turn aside so that I might see. This, what is it? I might see a mar a. Now, here again, Hebrew loves a cognate accusative. Mar a is the noun from the verb ra'ah, right? You see the verbal root ra'ah in there? So, if you vow a vow and dream a dream, you see a sight, right? And let me see the sight, the big one, the this one. Huh? You got to go to the next page. Let me see this great sight. And now sort of hanging there, he explains what it is. Why? Madua just means why, doesn't it? Why? Lo yivar hasane. Why the bush not will burn? Now, again, here's one I got to scratch my head, because the bush was burning in the previous verse, wasn't it? Right here, the bush is burning with the ba'ar and the participle. You see that? The bush was burning with fire, but it was not being consumed. Now he's saying why the bush is not burning. So what was it? It's either burning or it's not burning. Well, it's burning, but it's not being consumed. So what does he mean by why the bush is not burning? Maybe burning in the normal way? Is that what's being implied here? Burning up. Yeah, that would be a simple way of getting through it in English. It's yeah. Well, there is sort of an awful mystery is here. Verse 4. Are we doing 4 yet? Any questions on 3? I can't answer that one as fully as you might like. V'yar, kal imperfect of ra'ah. Again, ra'ah is so irregular, it does dumb things like puts a pathak there. Why there's a pathak there? And Yahweh saw that sar, here's the perfect, right, of sewer. We just saw sewer. He said, let me sewer. And now he's sarred. And Yahweh saw that he had turned aside. Liraoth, nice textbook infinitive construct of a third hey. All third heys have infinitive construct ending in oath. You can take that to the bank. To see. And he karad to him. Who did? Elohim. And Elohim called to him. Mitok Hasne, from the midst of the bush, Vayomer, and he said, and now wait a minute, and Moses said, and he said, see, wouldn't it be nice if they actually had quotes at a time like this? Because you're tempted to read, and he cried out, and God cried out to him from the midst of the bush, and Moses said, Moses, but no, and he said, comma, quote, Moses. My children once counted in the movie The Ten Commandments how many times somebody in the movie says, Moses, Moses. Do you ever? It's 13. Here it is in the Bible, all right? You don't need Charlton Heston for... All right. Moses, Moses. And he said, Hineni, right? Which being interpreted means, yo. Hine, remember, Hine means what? Yeah, there's something here, right? There's something here. Pay attention to this. In modern Hebrew, even in Israel today, the response when they're taken roll in school or whatever is Hineni. It means, it's not just I'm here, it sort of means present and accounted for and ready for assignment. So here I am. What's up? V'yomer, and he said, Al. Now this is Al. Hey, I didn't talk about this on the test. Some of you, and I did mark wrong for the for this, where'd we have that on the test? Like number 6, you will not touch it lest you die. Or number 10, you will not walk after other gods. Some of you translated those low. That's low, remember. On the test, it was the negative word low, which really is the indicative. Low negates an indicative statement. You will not touch it lest you die. You will not walk after other gods. If you have al, then you have really the negative command, do not. Okay, is that right? Yeah, that's what we got here, right? Do not karav. Do not come. By the way, which one of these is the Decalogue? They're all lows. I mean, you might think about that. Are those indicatives or are those imperatives? All right, do not karav. Didn't we have karav on the last vocab test? It means to come near, approach. Do not come near halom. That's an adverb that you probably don't remember, right? Halom means here or hither, right? Hither, thither, those are great words, aren't they? Do not approach here shal. Anyone parse shal? It's actually an irregular verb from nashal, first nun, right? First nun is gone in the imperative, just like Nathan turns into Tain, huh? Or Halak turns into Lake. Well, that'd be a first yod. What's another first nun? I can't remember. So take off, remove your na'alim, your footwear, sandals, from upon your regals, your feeties, because the place which you, oh, this is great Hebrew, right? The place which you are standing upon it, right? The place which you are standing upon it. The place upon which you are standing, right? Get it right in English? Don't end a sentence. What do they all say? A preposition is not a word to end a sentence with. The place which upon which you are standing, Admat Kodesh it, ground of holiness it, right? Ground of holiness it. I always like to make the theological point, even though you can, by the rules of Hebrew grammar, argue that Hebrew would rather have a construct noun than an adjective. And therefore you could translate this as holy ground. There's something different conceptually between holy ground and ground of holiness. Do you hear the difference? See, ground of holiness doesn't imply that the ground itself is holy, but it's a place where there is holiness. But it's not the ground that's holy, it's the presence of God on the ground that makes it holy. I mean, there's a kind of a cool theological issue at stake, right? that the holiness comes from something extra nos outside of ourselves that isn't inherent to the ground, but nevertheless makes it holy. Just the way justification works, right? It's not the grace infused by which you work out your salvation, good Roman Catholic justification by grace, but it's the grace that's given to us externally and imparted to us by Christ, by something else being in us than ourselves, right? I mean, that's kind of the same concept. There was a question. How do you form a negative command? How do you form a negative command? You use I'll plus the imperfect. That's exactly what you do. Okay? Go look it up.
What was your translation again?
All right, what do we got? All right. Well, yeah, from off your feet, because the place upon which you are standing. See, the resumptive pronoun is right here, is really telling you what the asher is all about. So these two go together. Upon which. So you have to put the al on the asher to get it right. Because the place upon which you are standing, holy ground it is. The who here is going back to the makom. It's kind of redundant in English. It is ground of holiness. All right, 6. V'yomer, and he said, Anoki, I guess God's still talking, right? Anoki Elohe Avika, I am the God of your Av, one dot, one father. Did you ever learn that trick? Remember that Av, Ach, and Pe have these irregular forms with an extra hirik yod in it? Which makes you think that they are like the nouns that take the pronominal suffixes that go on plural nouns, because all the pronominal suffixes that take plural nouns or go on plural nouns have an extra yod in them. Except for these. But here's the rule of thumb. One dot, one father. Works every time. The God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Yitzchak, and the God of Yaakov, V'yaster, and Moses, here the subject's there, right? And Moses satard his panim in the hefil, caused his face to hide, if you will, or hide in the transitive sense. And he hid his face because Yareh, he was afraid. Yareh, state of verb, he was afraid, mehabit, from to see, to look at. This is the hifil of the first nun, na bat, na, right? To gaze at, to stare, to observe. Navat doesn't mean just to look or see, but it really means to sort of examine visually. From staring, observing, hifil infinitive construct, first nun. To the God. All right, then we skip down, don't we, for the sake of not doing all the verses here. We kind of get down to the meat. Where do we go? 13 to 15. Well, you got to read the stuff in between, but let's pick it up at 13. V'yomer Moshe. What has happened here? You hate to skip verses? I hate it when the lectionary does that. And Yahweh said, I have certainly seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and there, Tsa'ach, I have heard from before their taskmasters, because I have known their affliction, their complaint, their misery. And I have come down, interesting, he has, to rescue him, that is Israel, from the hand of Egypt, and to bring him up from the land, that land, to a land, a good land, a broad land, to a land, ooh, Zavath Kalabu Davash. Been there, done that. A land flowing of milk and honey, to a place of the Canaanites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Kiwis, and the Yebusites. The E is the so-called gentilic ending that we have as an or ite, as in American or Mexican or Canadian or Israelite. Or Jebusite, or mosquito bite. And now Look, behold, the crying out of the Bnei Yisrael, Baa, has come up. Isn't that powerful? Has come up to me. But he just said he's come down and it's coming up and he's going down. And where am I? Came to me, and also I have heard the oppression which the Egypt is oppressed, the Egypt guy, which Egypt is oppressing them. Vata, and now come, and I, so that I, was that imperative? Come on, and I will send you to Paro and bring out, infinitive absolute, I guess, bring out my people, the Bnei Israel, Mimitzrayim. But Moses said to the God, me, Anoki, Ki Elek El Paro, who am I that I should go to, and that I should bring out the Bnei Israel, Mimitzrayim? And he said, Ki Ehya, here ya, God almost got to get the 12 before he can get to the rest, because Ehya, I will be with you. Here's the first Ehya right here. I will be with you. And this to me is the sign, this to you is the oath that I have sent you in your coming out, in your causing to come out, Hifil, the people from Egypt, you will avad the God upon this mountain. I remember, I don't want to miss this. This is the full circle of getting to Mount Sinai in Exodus 19. He said, this is the sign, you're going to worship me on this mountain. All you wanted was a three-day pass, but you're coming out and you're going to worship me back here at Sinai. 13. And Moses said to the God, Hine, look, I, Ba, parse Ba. Oh, this is just ripe for the test. Parse Ba, this one's good. Who's got it? How do you know it's a participle and not a perfect third singular masculine? Because it sure looks like a perfect third singular masculine, right? Of a hollow root bull. Answer? The subject is Anoki. It's got to be first person. And if it's perfect, then it's third person singular masculine. If it's participle and the form is ambiguous, if it's participle, participles don't have any person. Ah, there's your wild card. So you can have a participle as long as it's singular masculine. So this is a participle, right? A participle with hine is this so-called imminent future. Look, something's about to happen. Look, I'm gonna go. In fact, that this participle but plus a hine plus a participle can often be translated going to do something. Okay? Look, I'm going to go to the Bnei Yisrael, and if this is perfect while consecutive, how do you translate the amarti as while consecutive? The same way you translated ba. And I'm going to say to them, now you can leave that as future, it's not wrong. I'm going to go, and I will say, you can certainly argue that, but I think better is to this again, the perfect while consecutive is this sort of wild card chameleon tense that's going to agree with whatever goes in front of it. So take it as another participle. And I'm going to say to them, Elohe, the God of your fathers, Shilachani. Kal, perfect, third singular masculine, with an object suffix. This is an object suffix, right? He sent me. Shilachani. Propretonic vowel reduction. Ah, textbook form. The God of your fathers has sent me, Elekem, to you. And they say to me, Mashmo! What's his name? What? Omar. Here's our friend, again, that first Aleph form that should be written, what? O Omar, with two Alephs. It's the same form we were looking at with Akal on the test, right? This is imperfect, what? First singular common, first verb. What will I, again, that Aleph kind of goes away, what shall I say Elohim to them? The Yomer Elohim El Moshe. Here's the punchline, right? I always like to say, no identity crisis here. I am who I am. Of course, you can debate forever what this actually means. Ehyeh, Asher, Ehyeh. You'll notice, of course, that it is the verb Hayah, which, if it's related to the name Yahweh, at least has to assume that Hayah and Hawa are the same form. See previous comments. Right? And if this is the first singular common, then Yahweh is the third singular masculine of the same root. I mean, that's sort of the assumption of how we got Yahweh out of Ehyeh. Right? Of course, then you have to explain why there's a pathak here, because if you parsed Ehyeh, it would actually be kal, right? Ehyeh is kal imperfect. I am or I will be, if you take it as future. But Yahweh, if you have a pathak under the third singular masculine or under the imperfect prefix, what is this pathak telling you? Hifil, technically. Which would not be I am, but he causes to be. Oh, that's kind of interesting. But before you theologize too far on this, at least consider that this might be an Amorite form. I think it's a kal. It's a kal in Amorite, but we don't know enough about Amorite to be sure about this either. But this is why you can write commentaries in. And thus you will say, what? And he said, thus you will say to the B'nai Israel, now Ehyeh becomes a proper noun, right? Ehyeh Shilachani has sent me to you. Kind of interesting way to put it. I am or I will be. That's the guy's name, Ehyeh. V'yomer Oth Elohim, and God said some more, Oth El Moshe, Kol Tomar El B'nai Israel. Thus you will say to the B'nai Israel, Yahweh Elohe Avothekem, Yahweh the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Yitzchak, and the God of Yaakov, if you didn't get it right the first time, Shilachani has sent me to you. This is my Shemi, this is my shame, my name, Le'olam, forever and ever and ever, as long as time endures, into perpetuity. And this is my Zeker, my remembrance. Now remember, you can write a theology of remembrance that's probably a piece of your growing biblical theology vocabulary. Remember, in biblical models, doesn't just mean I can get it right on the test because I remember the answer. Remember always means to make a connection between the past and the present. All right? Do this in remembrance of me is not just thinking good thoughts about Jesus, right? But it's making an actual connection between Jesus and me. L'dor dor, to generation, generation, kind of a crude way of saying on and on and on. This is history. The Old Testament concept of history is dor l'dor, from generation to generation. That's how God's history moves on. You have kids, and they carry the story into the next generation. And you make sure they get it right so they can get it right to their kids as they carry it on into God's holy history.